I'd like to start with a quote from Shoghi Effendi. "We cannot segregate the human heart from the environment outside us and say that once one of these is reformed, everything will be improved. Man is organic with the world. His inner life molds the environment and is also deeply affected by it." I think when we think about building communities, we cannot ignore how much the society influences the individual, but also vice versa. And I think many youth around the world in this period of youth, we share this desire, this yearning to make a change, to make an impact. And I think throughout my life, I've been fed this narrative that the only way you can make a real change is if you do it big scale, with thousands of dollars or with millions of likes on Facebook, or if only you could change this one policy that would impact millions and millions of lives. I'm here to talk to you today a little bit about some of the things I've learned in our efforts to build communities. I am not an expert, and I hope that whatever I can share today will contribute to the growing body of knowledge around what does it mean to build real communities. When we think about changing the world, how can we start? So this drive to make the world a better place has caused me to set up BehindSpire nonprofits, set up social enterprises, and really redefine who I am. Before college, I took off a year to set up a BehindSpire nonprofit called GEM, Global Youth Empowerment. And the idea was that if you can give young people the opportunity to discover what their passions are, they can use that to change the world. So we developed workshops and trainings that were all about self-discovery, innovation, and social entrepreneurship. And it seemed that we had it all. I really thought I was on top of the world. We had open mic nights, we had interviews, I raised about $250,000 in investments and sponsorships. I even dropped out of college, business school, junior year, because I thought this was my life's calling. I have since gone back, I promise. And, you know, something was just missing. It seemed that you cannot create sustainable social change with one-off events. You can't create it by inflating the sense of self and the sense of ego. So let's fast forward to San Francisco about 2 years ago. We had since shut GEM down, and I was looking for something. I was again searching and yearning. And a couple of my friends and I decided to try and start a junior youth spiritual empowerment program in San Francisco. And this program is for middle school ages, 11 to 15. It's a program that helps young people discover their moral framework, to develop their powers of expression, to have this community and cohort, and to ultimately give back to their communities. And so a couple friends and I, from all different religions and all different walks of life, got together to start studying Ruhi, a BehindSpire course that builds capacity within individuals who want to create social, economic, and spiritual change within their communities. So right before completing this book, we met this girl named Val, who lives in the Western Addition in San Francisco, who wanted to start poetry nights in her neighborhood. And we said, you know what, we'll come help you out. So my friend Kelsey, we made posters, we were very excited. We went, and on day one, we kind of just went around knocking on doors, asking people, hey, would you like to come? You know, we're looking for youth. And it was quite a different culture. People would talk to us through their closed gates, through their windows. I remember one of the early days when we were trying to start our junior youth group, I was knocking on this individual's door, and I heard someone yelling at me. And I kind of looked around, and I was like, who is talking? And I looked up, and there's this young gentleman who clearly I had woken up, it was 10 a.m., yelling at me, and these were his words exactly. Who's knocking on my door like they pay rent? I was terrified. I somehow managed to convince him, we're good friends now, his name is Demetrius. I managed to convince him to come down with me that morning and help me find youth in the neighborhood. When they talk about pillars of communities, he was one of them. When I knock on doors, I'd be like, ding dong, anyone home? When he knocks on a door, bang, 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 yo ma, you home? And he would walk me around the neighborhood. Hey, Ella, she's 11, she lives over there. This 15-year-old kid, he lives upstairs, come with me. And through these fledgling efforts, our first junior youth group was born, believe it or not. And after about 6 months of a lot of yelling, a lot of rejection, and many, many prayers, we began our first junior youth group. We started meeting in the park. We eventually had to start a children's class because a lot of the junior youth's younger siblings would tag along. So that group kind of started to grow, and we realized we need a space. The park was quite distracting. And so a couple friends and I got together, and we said, okay, how can we intensify the efforts that we're doing? We're already serving regularly, and we said, let's study some materials together. So we looked at the 29th December message from the Universal House of Justice, and I'll share one passage that really resonated with us. The pattern of community life has to be developed in small centers of population, where intense activity can be sustained. It is here that the process of collective transformation is most keenly felt. Here that in time, the society-building power inherent in the faith becomes most visible. So after a lot of reflection, consultation, we thought, if we want to try and develop this pattern of community life, we have to become one with the community. If we want to have sustainability, we have to intensify. And so a couple of my closest friends, Justin and Caitlin, and I decided to move into the neighborhood. Now, it is government housing, government-subsidized housing, so we couldn't actually move into the heart of the neighborhood, so we went right to the corner. I had this little Craigslist alert on, and I found a unit with two homes right on 4th and 5th floor in the same building, and I was psyched. We moved in. We had our first youth group on the floor in my little studio, and we were able to start doing service projects together and learning with one another. It's been almost a year now since we've been serving consistently, and it's been incredible to see how this group, which started as a once-a-week Saturday thing, has become such an integral part of our lives. I mean, we hang out with the youth outside of group. We go on field trips together. We go on hikes. We cry with the mothers. It's become such a part of my life. And I could go on, but I can't quite explain how transformative it has been for me as an individual, as well as the communities we work with. The youth through this program are starting to question, can I resolve conflict without violence? Can I learn to express my feelings that go beyond just anger or happiness? A lot of the moms we work with are single mothers. They work so darn hard. And one of the mothers recently told me, you guys, our team's about 6 mentors or animators. She said, this is the first time I feel like I have a team. You guys have my back. And that sense of community where we all help with one another has been quite rewarding and amazing. We've even gone on field trips together, trying to expand kind of the horizons and what the youth believe are possible. We also started a mother's night for a lot of the moms of the junior youth we work with to try to create a supportive space where we pray together, we cook together, we talk about the progress of their kids through the group. And now one of the mothers is actually becoming a very much catalyst for change in her own community. Just 2 weeks ago, we finally started a training for youth mentors who want to go and start their own junior youth groups. And these are individuals from the neighborhood that we serve who want to start programs with their own kids and hopefully perpetuating this self-sustaining process so that individuals like us who come in from the outside and try to become one can eventually become obsolete and this process becomes truly sustainable. When I take a step back and reflect on all the work that we were doing with GEM, which I really thought was my life's calling, and when it failed, it was devastating for me, I realized what we've been searching for the whole time was exactly this like true sense of community. And one thing I realized, is that this kind of community building is not sexy. It's not flashy. No one pats you on the back. You don't get interviews about it. It's not grandiose. It starts with ones and tens, not thousands. Hopefully, eventually, it gets to thousands. It starts with friends coming together, studying, trying to be and do. And it starts with small steps, changing one heart at a time. So if I had to summarize a couple of things that we've learned, one of them is that we need to eliminate dichotomies, this idea of us versus them. I think that when you try to solve a problem saying, oh, I want to help you over there, I want to solve your problem, that's pity. But when you say, hey, let's make this our problem, let's solve it together, that's empathy. That's true community building. That's becoming one with the population you're trying to serve. And I think so much in the dialogue around international development is this idea of like, we need to save them, but who is them? Why is it not us? The second thing is this concept of crisis and victory. Crisis and victory is what leads to growth. You know, sometimes, there are many times where I just wanted to give up, where I thought, who am I or who are we to think we could make a difference? We had one time where a couple of the youth got in a fight and the police got involved. And we thought it was over. We're like, for sure, the parents are never going to let us play with their kids again. And actually what happened was this gave us an opportunity to do some home visits and talk to the parents about what does nonviolent conflict resolution look like? How can, when we're confronted with the thought of war, overcome it with a stronger thought of peace? And through that, our efforts also have become to strengthen with the families, with the youth, with the community institutions at every level, we're trying to have this dialogue. And lastly, it takes a village. I can't tell you how many times I've gone upstairs to Kaylin and Justin's house and just laid on their floor feeling quite helpless, or how many times we've had to lean on one another. If, for example, I'm gone one weekend, our friends will step in and take over the class and vice versa. How we've worked with the mothers to start really problem-solving together. We cannot do it alone. And that's not what we're here for. So I would like to invite you, not challenge you, I'd like to invite you to try and look around at the communities you occupy. What dichotomies can you observe? How can you try to eliminate them? And get to know people that maybe don't think like you, maybe don't talk like you, maybe don't live like you. How can you try to integrate with other types of communities where we can truly cultivate the sense of diversity and oneness? Thank you.